We continue with the actual show, and in studio is our friend Kelly Kittley. Nice to see you again.
Good to see you too, guys.
And we talked about a book that you have written that was coming out last time you were in. It's now, you can order it. It's out. It's available.
It is. Amazon. Right.
Called what?
Myself.
And how do I get it?
You can get it on Amazon. And you can also get it on Create Space, which is where the program I use to self-publish, or go directly to my website, kellykittley.com.
Okay. And let's tell people what Myself is, because it's really a pretty triumphant story.
Thank you very much. It is an autobiography of survival about my life growing up as a Chicago native above my parents' tavern in Lincoln Park, and some of the trials and tribulations that I had gone through as a child in a household of addiction, and then my own addiction, and how that led me to my career as a psychotherapist.
And for people who are going, well, okay, this is starting to sound more and more like me, you also had a family? You have kids?
I do. I have four children.
You were working out every day. You were taking care of yourself. You were doing all these things while you were essentially a functional addict, right?
Oh, absolutely. If I got up to run at 5 o'clock in the morning, yeah. I don't know too many alcoholics who do that. So
right.
That kept me sick for a long time.
At right. What point, though, did you say, okay, you know what? I need to get some help. I mean, because you were functioning. You mm-hmm. you had not just one thing, one issue, two issues. You were battling through several
sure.
different issues. And at what point did you say, I got it. I need help.
It was a spiritual awakening for me. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, and hated myself, and definitely wasn't the best version of myself, but I played it off pretty well. And my girlfriend, who I grew up drinking Mad Dog in paper bags in mm-hmm. the alleys in eighth grade.
Dave, Mad Dog.
I was enjoying the story.
Right, Steve. Right, right. Now, just Mad Dog. Whenever anybody says Mad Dog in the studio, Dave weeps openly.
Squirrel. We should be clear, though, that was you've been friends with Mary Sandberg Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet, for a long time. That wasn't her.
No, that wasn't
guys
her.
Were, okay,
no.
Good, good.
We were hitting softballs together.
Okay.
But your friend inspired you, or you saw in your friend what you needed to fix, or fix that part for me.
Both. So we grew up together, both children of alcoholics, and she got sober about 2 months before I did. And we had been working out at a CrossFit class. It was Sunday morning at 9 a.m. and I was, you know, puking mid-burpee. And she said, "How's your drinking?" And I just burst into tears. And she said,
"You didn't want to feel that way anymore."
I didn't. And I saw something in her. She just seemed so at peace. And there's
right.
a chapter in the book about her.
Did you fall off the wagon?
No.
So how long have you been sober?
4 years.
Wow.
God bless.
Thanks.
You know, the average number of times that people go through drying out treatment rehab is 7 yeah. before you get the cure, if in fact you're that committed. So you're a little yeah. miraculous.
Yeah, I feel that way.
Yeah.
And I want to share that with people because it's possible.
How old are your kids?
11. Everybody had April birthdays, including myself.
Wow.
11, 9, 7, and my youngest will be 5 on Sunday.
Might I suggest when your husband gets that look in his eyes next July that you run? You know?
I was trying to backtrack, too.
Seems like that's a really busy month. I don't know, July or August,
July.
Whatever that
yeah,
is.
We're yeah. on vacation
yeah,
in
yeah,
July.
Yeah. But this is so inspiring to me for your kids, because I grew up as a child of functional alcoholics, mm-hmm. and a lot of times not so functional. And it's really inspiring, I think, for your kids to for you to be so honest about your story and to be able to tell it. Because, you know, you can worry about them and go, they've got the gene, mm-hmm. and, you know, I can be completely upfront and open with them and know that this is the risk they're going to face in their life. This is the road your mother traveled. You don't have to take that path.
Absolutely. And they understand. They know I go to meetings. They know that I have an allergy to alcohol. They know I don't act right when mom drinks, and dad's okay when he drinks. So different experiences, and I try to model positive behavior.
That's interesting. Your husband still drinks?
He is. We met at my parents' bar.
Was that ever a problem? Because I know for some couples it is.
The first year was hell. I mean, our relationship started in a bar, and, you know, there was a new normal for us, and it revolved around me going to meetings and me being sober and getting rid of alcohol in the house and things like that. And we had to work really hard at that. But
we have to be able to. This is the thing. A friend of mine has a great quote about this in regards to my brother. You know, it's Mickey. He's all of our heroes. My special needs brother has been sober now for 13 years. Yeah. And he said, if you go into a barbershop and you sit there for 3 hours, you're going to get a haircut. He said, the deal is you got to go into the barbershop and sit there for 3 hours and not even want a haircut. Mm. And just go there to talk.
Yeah.
Just sit there and socialize. Mm-hmm. And my brother now goes to the same bars that he was thrown out of to say hi to people, to have a Coke or a Pepsi,
yeah,
to socialize and whatever. That's when you know you've passed over, right? Mm-hmm. When you can get up in the morning and you can smell it, you can see it, you can see people laughing and socializing with it, and all those triggers don't send you back.
Sure. So. And the first year wasn't like that. I was terrified.
I'll bet.
I couldn't go to bars. I needed to eliminate some of my social activities because it was. It's a cunning, baffling, and powerful disease.
Before you got to that point, though, Kel, did you find yourself kind of making excuses like, oh, it's okay, it's just wine with dinner, or it's okay, I'm just, you know.
Or
I'm
just ran. Gonna, I just went right. for a run, I deserve
it. I ran a marathon.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. After,
you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, all the time. I ran a marathon and went out drinking right after the marathon and got arrested on Lincoln Avenue because I was popping a squat in the street. And I thought, oh, that's just because
just
I was
peeing.
Drinking.
Right. I was right. celebrating.
I was celebrating. Yeah. Vacations. No, I knew with two alcoholic parents, I knew the first time I had my first drink was a blackout. And I tried to manage and control for a long time. And
what's the basis of your practice? You work mostly with women?
Correct.
And are these women struggling with addiction or just women struggling with life in general, as we all do?
It's a little of both. You know, I don't primarily see only people struggling with addiction, life issues. I treat a lot of couples as well, relationship issues.
But as a strong, and I don't mean this to be flip at all because it's not.
Sure.
But as a strong, confident female mm-hmm. who has walked the walk. I'm always amazed by therapy. I think we all legally ought to be forced into therapy. I think it's a health club for your head.
I agree.
I think everybody should go. But I also know that so many therapists, they go home and the last thing they want to do is hear their family bitch. And the last thing they want to do is deal with the problems at home. And a lot of them have very troubled personal yeah. lives because, you know, they're making the hamburgers at home. They don't want to or work. They don't want the hamburgers at home.
Sure.
So in your case, because you've been a success at this, mm-hmm. to me, one of the challenges would be to remain non-judgmental and to walk through that process with the people. Is that just part of your professionalism? Or do you want to speed these people up and go, listen, I've done what you've done. Mm. I've sat there, I've whined, I've made excuses. I went for a run, I had another drink. You don't have to do it. Are you tough? Are you the drill sergeant? Or are you the mom? Are you the teacher? Or are you a little of both?
I'm all of it.
Yeah?
I am. You know, I mean, people come in and out of my doors when they're ready. And I had a woman come back who had been gone for 3 years, and she said, now I'm ready. And I'm a little tougher on her now. She's ready.
Because you want to hold her to account.
I do. Yeah.
Yeah, because you want success.
Yeah.
And for them.
Yeah. How important is a support staff, too? I mean, your family has to be there. I'm sure your husband was right there for you.
Oh, they were, but nobody yeah. thought I was an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. So
you were pretty good at putting up the front, huh?
Oh, yeah. I drank like everybody. You know, I was a binge drinker, and I rolled with that circle. So if I had a problem, they had a problem.
Sure. Right. So the book is out now, and your family still owns a tavern.
They do. I'm having a book signing there Sunday, April 30th from 1 to 3.
Well, that's great. So people should come out and meet you and, mm-hmm. And hear the story as well. But the symbolism there is something else. Because a lot of people who haven't walked your walk would go, why the hell would you go to the tavern?
Yeah.
Get away from the tavern. Mm. But you can't deny that part of your life either, right?
It was home for me. I grew yeah. up above it. It has a lot of really good memories associated with it.
Right, right. Your parents drink?
One does, one does not.
And what do they think of your path and your story?
Well, nobody's read my book in my family yet.
Because they don't want to?
I know of.
Right, right, right.
I think they're terrified.
You're not telling them not to, obviously.
No, yeah. I am not pushing it on anybody. I accept feedback if people feel moved. But there's a mixed bag of emotion out there, and it's tough.
You know, the ultimate, and I think this is whether you're codependent or you know, in the bottle or in the bottle of pills. I think the ultimate truth is you can love somebody and hate what they did and who they are and what they continue to do. But it doesn't mean you love them less. You know, my parents made a lot of mistakes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most people that knew them would go, well, they meant well. Meaning well's fine. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you didn't fail. Mm-hmm. But at some point as an adult, you got to go, it's not my parents' fault. Mm-hmm. I'm 21. I'm 25. I'm 30. I'm 35. Got to get my act together.
Personal responsibility. I mean, what parent hasn't made mistakes?
Sure.
Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I really want to mess my kids up today.
Yeah, no, that's not the goal. That's really not the goal. Stick around. We'll talk more in a second. 9:25, more coming up. The book again is called?
Myself.
Out and available on Amazon and most places where books are sold. It's Kelly Kitley. Spell the last name.
Well, first name's important too. K-E-L-L-E-Y. Kitley, K-I-T-L-E-Y.
And we're going to put Julia Roberts in this?
I think so.
She's going to play the lead?
I think probably. She's the most beautiful woman alive.
Yeah, she's coming off the heat of the People magazine cover.
I heard. Yeah. Maybe Reese Witherspoon, I think.
Oh, yeah, you got a Reese look.
Yeah, or Cameron Diaz a little bit.
Sure.
Reese has your look, yeah. Hi to everybody on CLTV again. How are we doing on the headphones? Any better?
No. No, they look great. They look good. You look good.
What do we know about young women and drinking and young women and drugging? More or less than, say, in the 80s and 90s and or the 70s when I was growing up?
Well, I think the important thing to note is it hits women in particular harder and faster. So the progression is a lot.
Is that physiology?
Yeah, absolutely.
So women can become addicted more quickly and do more damage more quickly.
Absolutely.
And they're probably more reluctant to get help. Again, these are gross generalizations.
Sure, sure.
But in general.
In general, yes. And the stigma attached to what an alcoholic looks like.
That's where I was headed with this. I'm glad you brought up the word stigma because, you know, one of the main sermons around here for me is talking about depression and mental health. And the fact that you need to drop this notion that you can snap out of it and you can walk it off, and we need to treat mental health with the seriousness that it deserves to be treated with. The same thing goes for this, I think. So if you've got friends that are out there mm-hmm. who are worried about their friend, they're worried about their version of you, drinking too much, they don't know what to say. First off, what do you say to them? And second, how do you avoid saying the wrong thing?
Well, first and foremost, I suggest people come from a good place and express their concern. But the number one problem that comes up is people think that they have the power to help somebody get help. And there have been family members that I've experienced that we have tried several times, and it wasn't until he was ready to actually seek that help. So it was hitting his rock bottom. But I think planting the seed is so important, and recognizing that you have concern, because if we don't say anything, then we just give people permission to keep on living the life that they're living, even if it's in destruction.
Yeah, and you got to come from a place of love and listening, right?
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of times people feel attacked or judged or become defensive when it's brought up. And, you know, interventions are great, but if somebody hasn't tried just having a face-to-face contact out of concern and love first, I think that that can backfire.
The hard part about interventions is accepting that it's not about you. It's about the person that you're allegedly trying to cure, and you can't bring your "how could you do this to me" into the room.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be "what can I do for you to help this get better?"
Yeah. I mean, we're selfish human beings. You know, everybody thinks, how does this affect me?
Right.
But being able to say, how can we support you?
Right. Before we run out of time, there's something else we wanted to hit, and that's violence against women in particular.
Yes.
And give me a bit of a sermon there that you wanted to mention.
Well, this month is Sexual Assault Awareness Month in April, and on Friday, April 28th, there is something.
It's a week from tomorrow, right?
That is, yeah.
Yeah, a week from tomorrow.
In Daly Plaza at noon, there is a movement called Standing Silent Witness, and it's to recognize and help people who have been assaulted to come together in solidarity, wearing t-shirts and just creating a sense of support and strength. And I'll be there, and I hope to see a lot of people out there as well.
For any woman that has been threatened or victimized or stalked or whatever the case may be, right?
Mm-hmm. We have to bring attention to it because it's not going to go away.
What time are we doing this?
Noon. Daly Plaza.
Noon, a week from tomorrow at Daly Plaza. Billy Deck was just in when I was out, right? Talking
yes,
about
was.
This?
Yes, he was. Absolutely. Yeah.
We'll and Schwimmer there. Involved in this too somehow?
He might be with Looking Glass, yes.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
I think so. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Kelly, you're doing great stuff.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Yeah, and I appreciate you coming in. So, again, let's get the book. I don't know if I've ever said this before. You need to get two copies because you're careless. You lose
that's
one.
That's right.
Yeah. It's called
That's
Myself.
Diagnostic.
Isn't it great?
Yes. Myself. Yes. Yeah, so you know what? And actually, in this book, get three copies. You might forget where you put one, along with the keys and wherever else you were last night. Myself is the book. Please get it. You'll be benefited by it. And keep up the fine work, and you're always welcome here.
Awesome. I'll be back.